good enough running around yesterday, he might be able to practice today. Is that going to be the case?
We'll see what he can do. You know, he did run around a little bit yesterday, and then they'll monitor him as he goes through today. So I don't have any other update. That's exactly what he just said. So we'll see what he can do.
You've spoken about how highly you thought of Odell in the draft last year. Was a trade possible at all in terms of getting up?
No.
Is it something you explored?
There was no trade.
He's not practicing again today. What's the approach from your standpoint when you have a guy? I'm sure it happens every week where you have to kind of monitor whether he's going to play or not.
Yeah, our approach is he's playing. That's our approach. We'll see 13 on Monday night. Very competitive player. Know him very well. He's going to play against us.
You've let players in the past play through some pretty significant injuries. Todd Hermans, for example, last year. What's your theory in gauging that when sometimes players maybe don't push themselves from coming from injury, come back?
It's good. There's no theory with mine. It's all done through the athletic training room and our doctors. So I don't weigh in on any injuries or. That's not my expertise, and that's all up to those guys. So I don't weigh in one way or another on any of that stuff.
The decision never comes down to that.
It never comes down to the head coach. Never should come down to the head coach. I'm not in charge. I'm not a medical doctor, so I don't never have cleared anybody to play and never will clear anybody to play.
So then it's between the player and the trainer then to decide? Or
The doctor, not the trainer. It's the doctor. The doctor should say who plays and who doesn't play.
How is Byron Maxwell looking this past few weeks?
I think Byron's played well in the last couple of weeks. You know, getting settled, getting an understanding of, you know, what we're doing defensively. But I thought he's played well in the last couple of weeks.
I know we've said that Diz handles all the running back rotation, but if Ryan Matthews keeps playing really well, you guys as a team have to make a concerted effort to get.
We just work on a daily basis here, so I'm not concerned with. You know, we'll see. You have no idea. That's why I'm never a hypothetical guy. Ryan could be the only healthy back in the second quarter tomorrow night on Monday night. So we don't ever have conversations about. What happens if this happens or that happens? It's just got to take it as it comes. So.
Friday question here.
Really? Yeah.
Draw a little straw.
It's efficient. You only have to shave once a week. So. Later in the week, we have more time. So.
Jordan Hicks has played, I think, more snaps than any other inside linebacker for you guys. How much has there been instances where he's been in charge of kind of running the show, getting the signal?
There has. You know, he gets the. You know, when D'Amico's out, really, he's the guy making the calls when we're in a lot of our packages, and he's done a great job of that. I mean, he's really in tune to the game plan every week. He's, you know, I've said it, and I say it as a compliment. He's never, since he got here, he's never acted like a rookie. He's just been really mature in his approach and his understanding of what we're trying to do. And I know Billy and Rick have the extreme confidence in him, so if he's in charge calling everything and making any calls, and he can certainly do that and has done that.
We've heard the term before, a good route runner for a wide receiver, but I'm not really sure exactly what that means. Like, what makes a good receiver or a very good route runner?
I think how crisp and clean they are on their routes. You know, it's not sloppy. You know, if he's supposed to get 16 yards and break at a 45-degree angle, he gets to 16 yards and breaks at a 45-degree angle. He doesn't start rounding his cut at 13 and kind of lean into it or kind of give the route away in terms of, you know, some guys peak, you know, all of a sudden I got to run a comeback, but at 13 I start looking back. Now you've given a clue to the defender. You know, you want the defender to think that you're going vertical and you're running a jet route when you're running a comeback route, so to speak. So the guys that can do that, not everybody can do that. Not everybody can run full speed through 16, sink, plant, drive, and come back out of the cut. At some point in time, they got to give a tell away to the defensive back to slow themselves down. So the guys that are the real good route runners make you think you're doing one thing when they're actually doing something else.
Miles, we've heard, is good at that. How has he helped some of the younger guys in that regard?
I just think in Miles' situation, he's got such a vast experience in terms of where he was, and I know he spoke to me about it in terms of, you know, he came into the league as an undrafted free agent, said he learned a lot, you know, when he was an undrafted guy, just studying the guys in one-on-ones that were getting open when he was a rookie. He said it was Terry Glenn that he watched a lot when he was at Dallas, watched a lot of what Witten does in his routes, and has really just became a student because he knew he had to be a great route runner, great guy with releases for him to make it in the league, and understood what it took for him. So spent a lot of time studying releases, spent a lot of time studying the different techniques and how to run routes so that he could perfect them. So.
Eli's only thrown two interceptions. What is impressing most about him this year?
I just think Eli's, it's his second year in Ben McAdoo's system, and you can see there's a comfort level in Eli in the whole system. Not only has he only thrown two interceptions, he's only been sacked four times. You know, he's getting the ball out of his hand quickly. He can recognize how people are defending their team. You know, if a coverage is rolled one way, he's automatically going another way. He doesn't stay on a receiver and say, hey, I got to throw the ball to this guy, so I'm going to wait for him to get open. He's really going rapidly through his progressions and putting themselves in a really good situation offensively. And they're throwing the ball a ton. You know, we had 41 completions last week. So it's not like some guys aren't throwing a ton of interceptions, but they haven't had a lot of attempts. He's had a ton of attempts. So there have been opportunities to pick him. There have been opportunities to sack him, but those haven't happened because I really think his comfort level is very, very good in that offense right now, especially being in the second year for him. So.
What makes McAdoo good? Does he have a certain style that stands out about him?
I think he's a good play caller. You know, I think Ben's got a real good – I think he understands his system. He doesn't try to do things that are out of what their system is. You know, and there's a lot of multiple – you got to have a good quarterback to run the system, but there's multiple guys on each route. I mean, there could be – there's a lot of five out, so there's five eligible receivers. And the thing that happens is when you have a quarterback that can quickly diagnose that this is the coverage and there they are, then bang, I'm going over here, even though my initial read may have started over there. And that takes – you know, it's a special match between a coordinator in a system and the quarterback that can implement that stuff. So, they're second in the league in run defense. You know, they've done an outstanding job at stopping the rush in the first five games. You know, and they've done it against everybody they played. They're big inside. You know, with Hankins and Cullen Jenkins in there, their linebackers are downhill physical linebackers. You know, that are really geared towards stopping the run. You know, and I think for that reason, I think a lot of people have tried to throw the ball on them a little bit more just because, you know, you may be banging your head against a wall in terms of trying to run the football against that look. So that's the first thing. And I think a lot of coaches on the defensive side of the ball will tell you that, hey, we're going to stop the run first, establish what we can do, and try to make the team one-dimensional. And that's how they've been successful on the defensive side.
When you let Todd and Evan go, like, how much were you relying on guys like, you know, Peters and Lane and Jason Kelce to kind of, you know, help whoever would be starting at the guard position?
I mean, that happens all the time. Whenever you lose inexperienced veterans like those guys, you rely on the other experienced veterans to help out. And we felt very confident in Jason and Lane and Kels that those guys could foster the younger players that were going to come in there and give them the experience and the knowledge that they have and share that with them. So,
I heard before that the tight end position on field goal is one of the most thankless positions in football. Do you agree with that, and why is it?
I think the entire field goal unit itself is a thankless position, and why do I believe that is that basically your job is to put your both hands on the ground, close your eyes, and let people take a running start at you, and the only way you ever get noticed is if you get knocked backwards and the ball gets blocked, you know. So no one ever says, you know, when someone hits a 52 yarder to win a game, boy, what a great protection by the right tight end on that play. You know, you don't notice them. The only time you do notice them is when the ball's blocked. So you know, those guys in those situations, whether it be the guards through the tight ends, everybody in that front that's protected on the field goal or the extra point, you know, it's really kind of a thing. Not a lot of guys want to sign up for that. You know, you put a job want up there and just said, hey, here's a job. You get to put your hand on the ground and have someone 320 pounds run full speed and knock you over. And if you do, you're not good at it. You know, just stand your ground. That's not a lot of guys want to sign up for that job. So, but it's a necessary in terms of how our game is played. So.
It seems like you're not afraid to use starters on special teams, more than most coaches maybe.
I don't know about more than most because we haven't studied that, but I think, yeah, with the roster, you have to. Now, we'll never have a starter that's a four-core special teams guy, but if a Malcolm Jenkins can be a kickoff cover guy and we can get one out of Malcolm, or we can get something out of Nolan Carroll, or we can get something out of Walter Thurman, you kind of share that through your starters. You know, Coop is playing wing on our punt team, you know, and it's. I think just with the numbers at 46, you have to do that. If not, I don't think you're going to be successful from a special team standpoint. If you're just continually using just the backups and always kind of thing, then you're going to be worn down a little bit. You know, I think we try to rotate those guys a little bit. A lot of it, if you'll see, we get different gunners out there just because if you're punting a lot and all of a sudden, you know, guys have covered three or four kicks, you know, it makes it difficult now. So you got to be able to kind of rotate and keep those guys fresh as you kind of go through that. So,
Sturgis, how's he looked doing this?
Been great. Hasn't missed a kick. This week? Yeah. We haven't kicked yet, so. Hasn't missed a kick. So, we'll go tonight.